Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. I am one of your hosts, Derek Grinning, and I don't know if you guys remember, but I also have a co-host named Sam Stanish.
It's me. This little Google Meet is kind of like I'm a little chibi character bubble popping up in the screen giving commentary.
Yes. Do we think this... Okay, so I guess not to bury the lead, for I guess people who maybe listen to this and don't rewatch the show, this is the clip episode. And the structure of it is like we get these three acts. We get Mako's recollections or remembrances, as explained to Prince Wu. We get Korra talking to Asami about Korra's journey, and we get Varric telling Bolin's story, essentially, to people.
The refugees.
Yes.
And, you know, they knew they needed to do something like this, given their past, and given the budget constraints. It seems like this is what we were able to do, and I think, you know, they did it.
Yeah, I think if I recall the DVD / Blu-ray audio commentary, this was definitely like, I mean, obviously clip episodes only happen because of budget reasons, but they're like, yeah, they're like, we had this episode order, but we literally could not make like animate another episode.
Because like there is only like two additional changes it feels like they make in this episode, where like they have that shot of like all of the villains on the phone, and like like that's one thing changed, and then they like put Bolin's head on the big Korra spirit body, and they don't even take away her hair in that animation. They like just put his head on it.
It's pretty fantastic. I feel like this was probably a quick and easy thing to do. I feel like, I'm pretty sure Kate Matilla is the one who wrote the final segment, the Varric one, because she was the writer of The Beach from Avatar.
Oh.
Yes.
The Beach That old. Makes You Old? Yeah.
No, The Beach That Makes You Trauma Dump. Is
The Beach That Makes You Emotionally Older.
Yes, exactly. Mature. But yeah, so I feel like she probably, if I remember the commentary, it was just like she ended up like adding those things that like necessitated some changes. I feel like the only thing going on in the other ones was just little pop-ups, which are cute. Do we think that was a reference to the, what are those called? Pop-ins, pop-up trivia pop-in thingies?
The Avatar extras?
Yes.
I hope so. Although those are just text, little like, rectangles of fun facts. Some of them, and they were kind of like Snapple facts, where some of them weren't true.
Yeah, I love that. I'm pretty sure
little jokes.
As the lore or the legend goes, it's like it was one writer doing them from the show, and he just was like making shit up, or like had some true stuff and some stuff that I'm sure he saw as canon but was not. I'm sure there's like a collection of Avatar extra fact checking.
There's like a spreadsheet, a Google sheet somewhere that you could look up episode by episode all the facts and whether or not they're true, green or red.
I feel like last time we talked about the fact or the Avatar extras, we talked about the idea of a pop up for the pop ups of, you know, like this was actually not true. This was made up.
And well, that kind of sounds like listening to an audio commentary for this episode.
Exactly.
Like an audio commentary on top of an audio commentary of a clip show.
Yeah, and it's not quite, for the Shadowplay Gaze listeners, it's not quite as plot relevant as the Utena ones. You don't get this sort of like meta context going on here. You just kind of, honestly, the only thing you really get out of it, at least I got out of it, is how much editorializing Mako tries to do on his own story, which was like a source of comedy for sure. But I feel like it's like not super examined. Like
they didn't even they did not dig in as deep as they absolutely could have and should have.
They were letting Wu and Grandma and the cousin guy like read him a little.
Yeah,
but it still was like not like. The true fucked upness of Mako is not delved into
It was like the Barbie movie critiquing Mattel.
Right. It was like, you know, more of a, what was the word I was trying to think of? It was more of like a farcical sort of thing and not necessarily like a commentary. It's like, yeah, all dudes. And then like that's the joke for sure. And it's like, we're not here to get deeper into that. Yeah. And I feel like that's how they were feeling with Mako too. Like, we recognize that everyone has thoughts on Mako, but like, we don't really want to get into that.
They did, like, it was good to have three characters being like, you're a bad person. It was good that the writers were willing to do that. It did, that one felt like the most like the Ember Island Players episode, mm-hmm. where they were poking fun at their mistakes and like the bad writing that they had done in the past, mm-hmm. Which was good. But yeah, even then it was like, it felt like the longest of the three segments, and it was all told through the perspective of this guy who sucks.
Yeah. I did love this part where Prince Wu, or it's like Mako's describing like kissing Asami in book two, and I love that Prince was like, no, yeah, that like checks out, like that's yeah. Totally, actually that one's totally fine with me. I was
this
like,
one's fine.
That was really funny. And then yeah, it was really cute. I like Mako's grandma, she's a fun character, and the unnamed cousin, I don't remember.
I'm sure he was given a name the first time he was introduced, but I don't think that he's had one this season. Yeah. It's kind of like the art son of Sue, where yeah. It's like, I know this guy, I've seen him before.
He does have a name, I'm just like, I don't know what it is. Maybe I should look it up. I'm on the Avatar Extras wiki page, and all of it is just like a numerical like listing of like the facts. Like, it doesn't give you context, like what was this scene described, sure. Or what was this on. There's a lot. They did a lot of these. I had no idea.
They did every episode, and they come up like every 3 seconds.
Damn. Yeah, there's 112 of them in The Siege of the North Part 2. That's more, that's like more than one. It's like four times per minute.
they were dead. That's all we needed. When they, you know, if they wanted us to watch the reruns, you know, we were watching them anyway, but they at least gave us something extra.
Yes, a little something. Yeah, that is insane. you're just sitting there as a child, and it's like four, like ding, 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 ding. Like, yeah. Oh my god. Ooh, and these are not like, most of these are like full sentences too. So you really got to be reading.
And some of them were like two part. Like it was like the first part of a joke, and then something would happen in the show, and then that made like the punchline after made sense. Like it was very layered.
Nuance. Okay, so the cousin's name is Two.
Oh, I think he did say that in this episode, now that you say that.
Probably.
This was nice to just sort of reflect on how horrible Mako has been the entire time. Mm-hmm. It's like, because even little things that I hadn't noticed before, like in the scene where he meets Asami, he like walks out into traffic from behind a truck, and then Asami like veers off the road trying to avoid him, and he's like, how could you not see me? And it's like, yeah. You were like sprinting into traffic.
He is fully that guy who's like yelling at people in the bike, like just standing in the bike lane, like, and getting upset at people. He definitely, if he had a car, he would be that person who just like flings their car door open without any sort of regard for anyone. That's Mako.
Without checking the mirrors.
Yes, and then he would arrest them because he's a cop.
Yeah, the most that I got out of this first section was just like how beautiful all of this book one and book two animation was. Uh-huh. Like even just like the boring like close-up on faces talking, like nothing needed animation wise scenes, or they have the most dramatic shadows and like amazing backgrounds and like just like beautiful shiny things happening everywhere, and then to go like to like the stuff that they do in book four, like the other like dialogue scenes, it's just like, oh my god. It's
yeah,
completely dive bomb. And like to that they wasted so much of their time with that budget on these like stupid plot lines makes me so angry.
Yeah, I did. We needed like a fourth storyline of just like some sort of omniscient character talking about like the production quality of Korra as it's gone on. Like, I feel like that would be a fun sort of like maybe Batu. You know, he's like evil, so he could be like, I'm going to critique the show itself.
Sure. Well, that's like kind of how why Ember Island Players works is because it is like propaganda from the evil side. Mm-hmm. And so they like were very critical of our heroes, whereas this is from their own perspective and being balanced out by a more grounded, not objective voice.
Yeah, just like other characters. I did like that too. These other characters who like maybe weren't present for stuff, just like commenting on things that happened. Like as a clip episode, it's cute. It's definitely not like the community clip episodes, obviously, because like functionally they can't be. I don't know. They did the best they could.
Yeah, but they're like better than like a That's So Raven or Star Trek clip episode where it's literally just like, remember when this happened?
Yeah, it's a little more egregious when it's like live action shows. Were those for budget reasons too? I haven't done like a thorough, like I guess TV history sort of thing. Like what were the clip episodes? What was the purpose?
I gotta imagine they're for filling orders and like conserving budgets for other episodes, because if you only have to shoot like a one room scene for like four pages of dialogue or whatever and fill the rest of the time with other stuff you've already shot, that just saves money.
Right. I mean, I know like what was the show I was thinking of? I don't know, there was some other clip episode thing.
Even in animated shows, like they reuse clips in every episode, not just clip episodes where like they'll reuse the animation, at least older shows that I'm more familiar with. Utena, Sailor Moon, Digimon, all that stuff. Like
yes,
all the transformation sequences obviously aren't being redrawn every episode, and they do take up like 2 minutes of time.
That's the buy-in as a viewer, you know? And I feel like as a kid, like that it never bothered me. I was like, yeah, this is the cool part where you get to enjoy the fun music.
Right. Where the Patamon is turning into Andromon.
And that's hype. To be fair, that happens like maybe twice in the 50 episodes of this show.
Yeah. Fine. Fair. That was just the most imprinted on me.
But it is very iconic with like the feathers, like they're all those fun little animation. Well, not, I don't know. Animate. Yeah, it's animation. Things were animated. I don't know why I was trying to disparage. Yeah, technically. I was thinking of Survivor. That was like, because I'm pretty sure they would do the clip episodes when for like Thanksgiving weekends or so, like or weeks, like when it was like they knew no one was going to watch, so they just like didn't bother having an important episode.
Sure. But then even then, that's still like fully new, or not, maybe not fully new. Remember it.
They were basically the deleted scenes.
Yeah. Avatar extras.
Yes.
The JP cut.
Jonathan LaPaglia. Is that how you say his name?
I say LaPaglia, but I don't know that I've ever heard someone say it.
Yeah, they just call him JLP, which is fierce.
I know. I'd love to go by my, what's that? Not initials, but what's the word for when you have it all like in a circle, your initials? You know what I'm talking about?
No, what is that?
When you have your like just the letters of your name like stylized.
Oh, like a monogram?
Monogram, yeah. I'd love to go by my monogram. SAS.
I thought you were asking what do you call it when like the la, what would you call the la part of LaPaglia? Where it's like capital letter.
The article? Wrote.
Is that it?
Well, if it's French, absolutely, because it's like, because la and la in French are like V. And that's
That would make sense.
And then what does the means? What does Paglia mean?
Prefixes, I guess, would be what you'd call them. Mm. Interesting. But yeah, you're right. It's supposed to act as an article. Like, the something
in Italian, Paglia. And now thinking about it, he does feel Italian to me. Paglia means thatch or straw used as roofing material.
Oh, the roofer.
The roofer.
Yes. Okay. Dang.
keeping us dry in that Australian heat, I guess.
Yes. Oh, just him just up on a roof hammering. That's what you do on a roof, I think.
Mm-hmm. He can lay his thatch anytime. Hello. So yeah, that was Mako.
Yeah, his was funny. I mean, just because that, like, by virtue of Wu being there, Wu is just a funny character. I loved the Wu down, like, that's just like his catchphrase. Cute.
Good bookends.
Yeah.
And also it was very Wu is queer coded. Yes. Moment.
He's like sassily like giving a rundown on Mako's like failings as like a heterosexual.
And he's like, this is helping me decide that I really should spend time away from women and not focus on them, like that kind of stuff.
Like, okay. He said
a couple things like that. And it's like, oh.
I know what you are. So yeah, that was a cute little Mako moment. Next was Cora talking to Asami. Asami brings her tea and Cora calls her sweet.
Yes, this is the most plot oriented of the remembrances. But that's only because an instant tangent, but I did a deep dive on the Parks and Recollections podcast this week because I got an advertisement that Rob Lowe and Alan Yang are leaving the podcast and Jim O'Hare and one of the writers are taking over. And I just love thinking about the people who do the like show, the recap podcast for their old TV shows, and like who's at what level of their career where they need that. And so obviously Rob Lowe and Alan Yang dipped. And you know, here we are as fans doing it ourselves. It's like, you don't need to do it if you're an actor. Just leave it to us.
Yeah, I'm always curious, like, who approaches like
Janet Varney and Dante Bosco?
Yeah. But like they're still doing that, right? They're still doing the Cora one?
Maybe.
Cora official podcast.
It was like Into the Elements or something, right?
Braving the Elements, which is a pretty cute name. Braving the Elements from... Yeah, I think so. I don't know if they've like done episodes recently.
The most recent one came out on July 25th. Breaking news from Braving the Elements.
Wow.
And then they hadn't done one since May. But that's still...
That's pretty recent. Interesting. Yeah. That started like 2 years ago now.
I know. It happened like right as we were starting Cora, I think.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. They're not slick. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I wonder what kind of propaganda they do on that show. Because it is an official Nickelodeon production.
The most recent reviews were saying how they need season 3, but I don't know if that means season 3 of Avatar or season 3 of Cora.
Oh, like people want like the third show.
Oh, the most recent. Okay, yeah, they haven't done. They were going through the episodes, and the most recent one they did is Crossroads of Destiny with Michael DiMartino and Zach Tyler Eisen. That's a great guess. That's probably a really good episode.
Yeah, that's fun. I wonder what he sounds like now. He's like a full grown man. He's probably, is he our age?
Maybe a little younger.
Yeah.
2 years younger, probably.
Wow. Chris, so specific.
Oh, no, he's my age.
Oh, so our age.
All right.
Just trying to claim ownership of being
29
going on 30. Interesting.
Weird collection of photos when you search his name.
I'm gonna wait. I don't even remember what is his name. Zach Tyler
Eisen, and there's a sort of like a Dylan O'Brien-esque photo of him.
I see that now.
But he, as a 29-year-old, it seems he looks different.
Oh, I have seen this little like YouTube thumbnail. YouTube thumbnails are just like an entire. I feel like you could just like talk at length about like the fuck is going on there? Oh, he voiced the penguin from the show, you know, the Backyardigans.
I thought you were gonna say that penguin drum anime you talk about.
No. I thought for some reason I wanted to call them something like, what's like the Eternals, like something Marvel related. Korra and Asami, that's who we were talking
yes.
about. Like, what section were we on? Yeah, right. This is very much more in the line of like Korra's ongoing story in the book, which is, you know, like thinking about her failings or like her perception of her failing as an avatar, as you know, after she's had her ass kicked by Kuvira.
Yes, but being so and being balanced out by like the real, like it, this is all, and this happens in. Well, I won't spoil anything. But like this is all about like Korra doesn't have the past lives to like balance out her anxieties and her stress about failing as an avatar. And so she needs these other people now in her life who are there to be like, you're still a good person, like you're doing as best as you can, like every avatar fails kind of thing. And you like you get back on the horse and you keep going.
Yes, and it's like, not like, girl, you haven't failed. You like stopped them all, like all three massive, like world-shattering events. You like stopped them. So like, get it together.
Okay, this is something that I've been seeing a lot lately on like TikTok commentary pages and all of the like when something goes viral on Twitter, being like Korra v. Aang, who blah blah blah. Oh. Maybe I talked about this last week. I can't remember, but they like everybody's like Korra caused 80% of her own problems or whatever, and I'm like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah, what, like, no. She didn't make her uncle be evil or yeah,
maybe I'm feeling like we did talk about this last week, sorry.
Probably, but it's like, yeah, that's just very silly. It's like people trying to justify why they I guess prefer Aang or think Aang would like be better than her.
Yeah, and it's like, look, I agree that Legend of Korra is not a good show, but it doesn't mean that Korra is a worse character.
Yeah, not at all. People are just like very weird on the internet. I know that's a strange thing to say, but I think it's true. So yeah, this one's a little more serious.
It was nice to have Tenzin come in too.
Yeah.
Like, he's really fallen into the background, like even as Korra's like spiritual advisor, he hasn't been doing much there, and so it's nice to have him in this scene.
He's been sleeping on the job, honestly.
He's like, been running a new nation. I get it, but
yeah, but like also like, what does he do? What's the day to day? It's like very CEO. Like,
yes.
What do you actually do? Because you're not out there like saving towns like the Airbenders are. It's confusing.
Yeah, he's like sending his children on missions. Yeah. Dangerous missions.
Literally trained an army of like child soldiers.
And like forced them all to shave their heads.
Yeah. But they like liked it or something.
They got used to it.
So yeah, that's Korra's little jush. I feel like there's not much to talk about other than, you know,
yeah,
the shameless flirting.
Because it is sort of retreading the stuff that she was going over with Toph, where she's like, I failed all the time. And Toph was like, yep. Instead, now it's like, she's like, I failed all the time. And they're like, yeah, but you did it good too.
Yeah, it almost would have been more fun to maybe get an Asami moment here of like Asami's recollection. But I mean, a lot of her story is tied into Mako's. So it's like, I don't know. You'd have to reshuffle a lot of stuff.
You would, but this does just like further show that Asami is not one of the main characters, because Korra and Mako and Bolin are the ones who get these like past visions.
Right, her biggest moments are like told from their perspective.
Yeah, and it's like the biggest moments for them, but like we don't hear anything about Asami like being betrayed by her father or like
yeah. Which the show told us was important because we saw him again, but I guess it's not that important to be remembranced. So yeah, that's them. Shall we move on to the more I guess labor intensive one of the three, or the one that has the most revisions?
Yes, this was fun.
Yes,
I'm glad that they, because I was like, I didn't remember what this plot line was like or like what happened in it. And in the lead up, I was like, what made Ember Island Players fun was that they like got it wrong and they like made stuff up that didn't actually happen. And so when like the conceit of the final remembrancing was made clear, I was like, this is what we needed.
Yes, this would have been fun. And I mean, honestly, like they John Michael Higgins has just been like, I forgot how much Varric is like in this freaking book. So it's like, just let him have fun for like 22 minutes. I think that would have been perfectly fine. Honestly, like Varric explaining the story to Prince Wu would be like the perfect like combination of what we needed.
If he had told every book to Prince Wu, that would have been good. Especially because like at that point you could just like rewrite the entire thing and just like make up everything. And it's like people who are watching this again on the Nick website know that this is not actually what happened. It's fine. Right. But on John Michael Higgins, I watched Best in Show for kind of the first time like a week ago, and he is amazing in that movie.
I know. A true workhorse of comedy. Just always there. I feel like always a standout. And I don't blame them for like being like, hey, do you want to like kind of become a main character in this season?
Yeah. I mean, his voice is just so... He's like an amazing voice actor. I feel like he doesn't voice act enough.
I know. I agree. He should do it more. Like, I feel like Varric could feel like Varric's character is like fully based on like the way he delivers those lines. I feel like anyone else would be like, it would just not connect as well. His delivery is so perfect.
He plays Mayor Anchovy in Baby Shark's Big Show.
What the hell? How is there a show of Baby Shark? Wasn't that like AI made? I don't know.
I guess he does do quite a bit of voice work. I'm glad. I haven't been, you know, it's a lot of kids' cartoons like Korra, I guess. Right. That makes sense.
Baby Shark's Big Show. This is very strange. There's two seasons of it so far.
Angie Tribeca, that show ruled.
What is that?
Oh, it was like Steve Carell and his wife made the show, and Rashida Jones played like a cop, but it was all like farcical, stupid nonsense comedy. Oh. Like none of it, like it wasn't like it didn't make sense in universe at all, but it like was really, really good.
I remember the ads for it, and I never watched it, but I should have because it looks really funny.
It was very good.
There were three seasons of it at least.
I know.
Damn. I didn't catch any of them. She looks so much like, I know that's not the actress's name, but Philomena Kunk.
Well, haven't watched that. I know.
Oh, Kunk on Earth is.
I know.
It's kind of perfect. Okay. There's a character named Bloop in Baby Shark's Big Show.
Mayor Anchovy is a great name. So, I think they've got naming down.
I'm just like, who made this? Jim Rash is in this cast too. This is a strange little show that I'm sure no one has like actually watched other than small children
on YouTube.
Yeah, it's weird to think about like what are the things that children now are going to like have nostalgia for,
right? That we've never heard of,
and it's like we're talking about this show that like, I mean, Avatar was more in our childhood, but like what from like now would warrant such like a discussion, honestly. SpongeBob's Camp Adventure, I don't know.
I just don't know any kids stuff.
Where are the narrative focus? Even like I know people love that show with the dog, Bluey. The it's like an Australian dog show or something. I don't know. People seem to like it. But I'm also like, from what I've seen of it, I'm like, is there a narrative to it? Like, or is it just like people like it because it's like pleasant to watch?
Next time Survivor goes on break, we'll watch season one of Bluey.
And I'm sure. I have no desire really, but people seem to like it.
Know that kids today, these damn kids today, really like these books called Wings of Fire, which are about like dragons saving the world.
Oh, fierce.
And a prophecy. I read the first couple. They were good.
Those sound like things that I would have been obsessed with.
Yeah, they were good.
a series of epic dragon fantasy novels.
Yes. Yes. By one of the writers of the Warrior Cats books.
Oh, damn. Oh, my God. There are so many of them.
Yeah.
I always forget, like, epic fantasy is, like, an actual, like, genre.
Derek, I never forget that epic fantasy is a draw. Is a draw.
But like the descriptor epic, I mean, maybe it's just like the millennial in me, but I've always seen it as like a descriptor of like
bacon bro things. Fantasy, troll face fantasy.
Homestuck, where's the? I mean, there are Homestuck recap pods, but where's the the full on revival? Where is it?
Well, there's. Did that game come out? I paid for the Kickstarter 10 years ago.
It did come out. Okay. But it's like, I've seen people play it, and it seems like well made. Just no, it's like not what you would want a Homestuck game to be, I guess. Because it's like not, like when you think of like, oh, I want a Homestuck game, you're probably thinking like, I want to play Spurb, like the game.
But it's like people walking around talking to each other.
It's just like a Homestuck, like a fully new story with new characters. There's like a new, like they invented like an entire new like Zodiac for the like different kinds of trolls. I don't know. It seems a little weird to me. Interesting. Books, sorry. I'm distracted by the Wings of Fire thing now. Okay.
I'd recommend them if anybody's looking for more kids media. I read the first three or four. Okay. I'll probably read more.
Maybe. So I feel like we're talking the least about like what I think was like the most fun segment of the episode, which was like that part where they're on the phone is really funny. And they're making fun of Unalaq being like an awful villain. I'm glad they recognized that. I wish they'd recognized it, but like as they were writing it, so they could have like changed that and made it good.
Yes, I loved it. It was good, like you're saying. Like it's funny to just completely reframe it as Boleyn did everything Cora did.
Yeah, Boleyn's journey, which is cute.
So it still looked pretty.
Yeah. it was a fun little clip moment. What else? I feel like there's another fun. Oh yeah, the Boleyn face on Giant Cora was cute. Yeah, fun.
Good stuff. He brought the Air Nation back. And then this worked also because they're like showing the refugees are on the boat. They're like they're traveling somewhere. So this was like helpful in the frame narrative.
Your favorite, not nitpick, but like thing to point out is the travel time. It's not really a nitpick if it's like a very valid sort of like concern for a show that started with think of book one of Avatar, where it's like you get 20 episodes of traveling from point A to point B.
but like this one could at least work. Like the Earth Kingdom is connected to Republic City, so they're like heading there, so they could get there by the next episode.
Right. It wouldn't be unbelievable for sure.
Right.
But they're tracking it. Do you have any other thoughts on this remembrance?
It was fun. Definitely liked the beat. it was good. It was retreading a bit, but that's what you get in a clip show episode. If they needed this to save money for some epic final fight sequence, sure.
Then so be it. I'm down. That's a sacrifice I'm willing to obtain. Or like I'm receiving their sacrifice. I didn't make any sacrifice.
That is funny.
No, thank you. Do you want to do pluggies?
Absolutely. Follow us at Predators Pod, Instagram, Twitter. Listen to Stanima, Survivor Panama recaps this summer from Christine. And follow me at Sim Stanish everywhere.
Yes, God. Follow me at Reindeerx on Twitter. Follow us at Bitterger's Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Shadow Play Gaze on Twitter.
Oh, and Buffy Boyfriends.
That too. Very great. Listen to all our friends' podcasts. I'll be on Matt Gagan's OC podcast at some point in the future.
Me too. I should be on Stanima soon with my Buffy boyfriend co-host, Mike. Mm-hmm.
Your boyfriend. Your Buffy boyfriend.
I think of us more as co-workers.
Oh. I will also be on Stanima too. Shout out to Christine.
Hope she's well. Miss her, love her.
Me too.
Oh yeah, and listen to our draft podcast if you didn't do that. That was fun. It was nice to get the girls back together for the summer.
That was a really fun episode. Go listen to that. Yeah, we'll see you all next week for a podcast that we're about to record in like a minute. bye.